from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. When a member of the president's cabinet departs, it's not normally a big newsmaking event. No deluge of soundbites or social media sharing. Just ask Ray LaHood how many tweets accompanied his announcement this week that he'd be leaving as transportation secretary. But there are cabinet secretaries, and there's Hillary Clinton. Today is her last day as Secretary of State, a long-anticipated leave-taking that even generated a sit-down interview on 60 Minutes side-by-side with President Obama. In the next hour forum, we'll take up the remarkable career of Hillary Clinton and where that career may take her next. Ahead on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Any politician would kill for her approval ratings, 69%, according to the latest NBC News Wall Street Journal poll. And one thing you can say about Hillary Clinton, she earned those ratings the old-fashioned way, the result of a long, hard slog rather than a quick, charismatic ascent. Today is Hillary Clinton's last day as Secretary of State, her last day of 20 continuous years of service in Washington, D.C. as First Lady, Senator from New York, and Cabinet Secretary. In this hour of forum, we consider her tenure as Secretary of State, her remarkable career, and where she may head next, since nobody much thinks she'll take those 69% approval ratings and go home for good. We'll hear from a variety of voices over the course of this hour, starting us out this morning. Joan Walsh, editor-at-large at Salon.com. Good morning, Joan.
Good morning.
Joining us, too, Bruce Kane, professor of political science and director-designate of the Bill Lane Center for the American West at Stanford University. Joining us from Washington. Bruce, good morning.
Good morning.
And Paul Richter, also in Washington, D.C., at the Washington, D.C. Bureau of the Los Angeles Times, where he's a staff writer. Paul, good morning as well.
Good morning.
So, I'm just dying to ask about 2016, but I'm going to force myself to talk first about Hillary Clinton's legacy and time as Secretary of State, and something you've covered and written a lot about, Paul. So first to you, how, when you were writing about her career as Secretary of State, and you talked to a number of diplomats about it, some of the sense in the writing I got was there was a sense that she was fine, but she didn't necessarily create a signature or own a signature foreign policy event. Characterize, if you would, your assessment and how others within the foreign policy community saw her.
Well, she's been very effective as an ambassador for the U.S. overseas. She's appealing to a lot of foreign communities. She's great standing up in front of a microphone and explaining American values. And she's been very effective in winning kind of approval for her job with the American public as well. But she hasn't, while she's had a seat at the table on all the major issues, she hasn't dominated any of the major issues of war and peace, as some past secretaries of state have done, nor has she really laid down an enduring kind of policy, as some have done in the past. Another problem for her has been that Obama inherited a very tough hand on foreign policy, a lot of really difficult issues, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Arab-Israeli peace. None of them have really budged, and some of them have gotten worse over the 4 years. So you can't really point to a huge kind of groundbreaking diplomatic success that some past secretaries have had.
And is that in part, Paul Richter, because it was also the Obama administration's desire to, as many past administrations have also done, to be their own foreign policy leadership that and as opposed to deferring to a Secretary of State?
Yes, exactly. In fact, as the term went on, the big decisions were more closely centralized in the hands of Obama and a small circle of men around him in the White House. In the beginning, it looked like Clinton was going to have direct control over issues like Iran, Afghanistan and Pakistan and Arab-Israeli peacemaking. But as time passed, all those issues kind of migrated over to the West Wing. So, you know, it cut her out of the action to a certain extent.
Joan Walsh, how do you see how she handled that particular aspect of her situation? In some ways, it almost seemed like she was asked to become kind of ambassador in charge of restoring America's image, as opposed to owning a particular aspect or another of foreign policy.
I think that's right. And I think Paul makes very good points. I don't think it could have been any other way. And, you know, I don't want to shift us over to politics immediately or necessarily at all. But, you know, I think that the legacy of her relationship with the president, originating in a fairly fierce primary battle, as well as the historic nature of his presidency as the first African-American president, who was really a global figure as much as he was a national figure from the moment that his chances seemed quite real. So that, you know, for her to come in and have any kind of Clinton doctrine or Clinton plan or take some large public role, I think would have been seen as somehow undermining him and was never what she was asked to do or signed on to do. I think that working in close concert with him was important symbolically to the country as well as to the world. I don't think you can detach the political imagery at home from the person's stature as Secretary of State on the global stage.
And the president has also said, and I guess said in the now famous 60 Minutes interview, that he wanted someone who was already a world figure, who didn't have to earn her stripes.
Yes, he did. And I think, again, you know, to speak to the historic nature of his presidency as well as her role, you know, I think that it was important to this administration to project a changing United States, changing in terms of demography, in terms of opportunity for people who'd been locked out, including African Americans, people who weren't white, and women. And so having not merely a rock star, but a female rock star, I think really told the world that this is a different United States. And, you know, for countries that have backwards views of women, that was important. And for countries and people across the world who put their hopes in equality for women, that was important.
Joan Walsh, editor-at-large at Salon.com. I want to come back to the question of the intriguing always question of the relationship between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. But before we get there, Bruce Kane, if you would comment on what happened with what seemed like, and Paul Richter hinted at this initial era within Secretary Clinton's time as Secretary of State, where it seemed like she would have more authority over these various aspects of foreign policy. And there were three special envoys, all very well-known, very experienced, high-profile individuals that were going to be her special envoys. George Mitchell for the Mideast peace process, Richard Holbrooke, Afghanistan and Pakistan, Dennis Ross in Iran, and none of that seemed to work out. What happened, do you think?
I think there are several things going on. I mean, first of all, her kind of marginalization in terms of determining foreign policy has to be said in the context of the fact that many people in the Obama cabinet felt that they were not part of the inner circle, that the inner circle was really the advisors inside the White House. And so it wasn't that she was being treated differently. I think this was part of a pattern. And it's a pattern that we see growing over the last 30 years, because presidents like to have the people that are closest to them inside the White House giving them advice, and the whole trend has been more and more for the White House staff to be more important. But beyond that, I mean, some of these missions were mission impossible, right? I mean, some of them you just couldn't imagine, you know, going to Pakistan and trying to improve relationships with Pakistan or even the situation in the Middle East. It's not clear that any envoys were likely to be very effective. And it seems to me that she probably decided that along the way to carve out some things which were not at that high level where she was going to be conflicting with military advisors, because many of the problems are military related. She carved out things like, you know, global hunger and cooking stoves and, you know, signifying or putting the approval on the Burma Revolution. I mean, she found some other issues which don't have sort of top drawer appeal right now, but you can imagine in an election in 2000, in the next presidential election, that she would be able to use these as talking points for a campaign and have some photo op opportunities that would appear on her initial ads where she's presenting herself to voters.
As we inch ever closer to the political aspects of this conversation, let me ask you, Bruce, what you made of, in the end, the relationship between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, the sort of famous team of rivals concept on which originally this idea was based, and whether it proved out.
I think if the story is true, that the example of where the team of rivals approach, hearing from different people, might have worked for Barack Obama was in the decision about what to do in Afghanistan, where, at least as I understand it, Joe Biden was on one side and Hillary and others were on the other side. And in the end, Barack Obama went with the advice that in Afghanistan, doing the sort of mini surge, if you like, that came from Hillary Clinton. And so, I mean, that would be an example, if that's true, of where the team of rivals approach, hearing conflicting viewpoints so that Barack Obama has the total picture, not getting stuck in kind of groupthink, where that style of leadership might have worked. I mean, people don't believe that that's consistently the way Barack Obama has operated, but that may have been an instance in which it did work.
Paul Richter, your observation on the Obama-Clinton relationship?
Well, I think it worked to some extent because Clinton was a team player. She was hardworking. She was willing to accept the hand that was dealt her on these issues that we've been talking about. And she was also, strong-willed about not letting the frictions between the staff that she brought with her, a lot of campaign aides to the State Department, them conflicting with the people in the White House who were Obama's campaign aides. There was a potential for strife there, and she didn't permit that. So, she kind of made this thing go, I think. I think Obama was grateful, and as we saw in this 60 Minutes interview the other day, he was glad to accept the kind of reflected glory of her popularity.
Yeah.
But I think, as has been pointed out, as time went on, Obama just found it much easier and quicker for him to rely on the small circle in the White House. You know, Clinton and Bob Gates recommended the Afghan surge, and Obama accepted that advice. But as time passed, he decided that was bad advice. I think now he's decided, that was, he felt kind of misled a bit by the military group and the Pentagon on that, and I guess to some extent by Clinton. So perhaps this encouraged his tendency to just rely on the inner circle.
Joan Walsh, it's interesting in a way. It's almost counter to what one would have thought, that it sounds like in the end, as was testified to in the 60 Minutes interview, that there really is a sort of genuine warmth and friendship between them. But perhaps not as that Hillary Clinton really didn't have as much clout, and one would have thought perhaps it would have gone the other way around, that there would have been clout but no warmth.
Well, I think had there been more clout, there might have been less warmth, and so maybe that's kind of a natural trade-off. I did think that there was genuine warmth between them. I thought I was prepared to dismiss that interview as media hoopla, and then I watched it, which is always a good idea before you dismiss something. And I found it very interesting. I think that there was a genuine warmth between them that can't be faked. By all accounts, they're not. She described them as close friends, but by all accounts, they don't hang out together. They don't go on date, double date nights or anything. But I think that there was. They are two firsts. They are two really middle class people who rose to extraordinary heights with some of the insecurities and pride that comes along with that. And I think they both worked very hard. I think to really have expected some kind of bad relationship after 2008 was to believe the worst about either or both of them, that Hillary Clinton was out to destroy the party presidency, or Barack Obama was a deep sexist who could never fully respect her. I never believed any of that, so I wasn't I wasn't surprised that they worked together well, whether during the campaign or with her as Secretary of State. I wasn't hugely surprised at the request that she join his cabinet in some way. But I guess I was a little bit surprised that there was just, I think there was a comfort on camera that you couldn't fake. And I also think they really enjoyed proving all of their critics wrong in terms of what kind of relationship they would have.
Jen Walsh, editor-at-large for Salon.com. We welcome your thoughts about Hillary Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State, her remarkable career, and where that career may head from here. You can join us at 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. It's impossible, Joan Walsh, to think of Hillary Clinton sitting still any more than it would be for Bill Clinton to sit still. What are your early musings about what she may do and the prospects for 2016?
I think that she sounds, as someone who's scrutinized her public statements on this and doesn't really have any inside information, her friends that I know are kind of divided in terms of what they think she'll do. They think she's genuinely wanting rest, but I think that, two things. I think that her public statements have gotten much more open to the idea. In her final AP interview, I think she said something like, well, I know I'm going to take the weekend off, and that's all I know. And, she's certainly not, she never shut it down entirely, but she came closer to shutting it down a year or two ago. Now, as this departure gets closer, she sounds much more open to it. I think that genuinely she must be exhausted, and I think that genuinely she must know that she could have, a wonderful rest of her life, a very powerful, influential, do whatever she wants in the world of philanthropy, in universities. And so she, I used to think that she would very well do that. I also think she's a very dutiful person. I think she has a sense of obligation to the people around her, and I also think she has a sense of history. And the thing that you can't get beyond is the number of women, even women who supported Obama last time around, who really feel a sense of it's not that it's her obligation, but that she's the one who can make this happen in our lifetimes. If you're over 35, and she's just surrounded by that. And I find it hard, but not impossible, hard to imagine that after some rest and relaxation and reading and writing, that she'll resist that call of history.
Let's listen to one of the many interviews she gave from this past week, just a short excerpt, and then I'll ask Bruce and Paul to comment on what they hear.
Can you still say with a straight face that you have, that there's no way you would consider running for president?
Sitting here right now, that is certainly what I believe. And I am, still the Secretary of State, so I'm not in politics. I'm going to be focusing on my philanthropy, my charities, my writing and speaking. So I am looking forward to having something resembling a kind of normal life again.
And yet, are we up to maybe?
That's very good, Cynthia. Well, of course, I am flattered and honored. I didn't even know about some of these things that are happening now. I don't know how else to say it, but I am going to get back into my life again. This is going to be new for me. I don't know how I'm going to react to it, to be honest.
That was an excerpt from an interview with ABC's Cynthia McFadden with Hillary Clinton. Bruce Kane, what do you think?
First of all, that's her wonderful laugh there, her characteristic laugh. But yes, look, I think she's going to run. I'm with Joan. I mean, I think that in the end, while she may not know whether she's going to run right now, and she may be too exhausted to think about it, and we don't know the extent to which the job that she just had and running for the presidency took its toll on her physically. So there are things that could happen that could change her mind, but it seems to me that given her popularity, given what was said before about the historic importance and the meaning of this to a lot of women, and the fact that she is the female candidate that has the best chance to win, and given that she did a really, a good job both in the Senate and in the Secretary of State's office, or at least avoided major mistakes, I think that all the cards are there, and, you know, barring health problems or some unforeseen circumstance, she's going to be the leading candidate going in, and I think she will definitely explore it.
Paul Richter, I know your beat is the State Department, and so unfair in some ways to pose a political question to you. So I guess what I'd be curious to hear from you is whether or not she really seemed in her element at State. She made many comments this past week as, well, you know, I'm Secretary of State. It's not a political position. Can't really comment. Is that true to who she is?
I think she did find herself in her element here because she has this very wonky side where she immersed herself in the details of diplomacy and learning the stories of these 200-odd countries that she had to deal with. All that was she really, I think, enjoyed. One of the benefits of being here was, you know, she got no questions about Monica Lewinsky. She got very few hostile questions ever on anything because the State Department reporters, to begin with, liked her, but secondly, you know, saw their role as asking minute, detailed questions about Syria rather than big, you know, rude questions about politics. So all of this she really liked. And as we've seen, whenever she seems to be doing the country's business rather than pursuing personal ambition, her poll ratings always drift upwards, and that's what's happened over the last 4 years.
And how did she manage, Paul, not to get tarred more by the Benghazi incident? Susan Rice obviously bore the brunt of that, and while Secretary Clinton said, you know, this happened on my watch, I'm responsible, never seemed like that affected her the way in which it did not only Susan Rice, but the president.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think part of it is her personal popularity. Another part of it is I think a lot of, you know, ordinary Americans think that, you know, there was a screw-up here on the security. Clearly, some really stupid things happened, but, you know, she's at the top of the pyramid, and, I mean, I think people did somehow didn't see her as, you know, responsible for guaranteeing that there were enough regional security officers, you know, outside the Benghazi mission on that day.
And Joan Walsh and both Paul and Joan, unfortunately, have to leave us here at the half hour. I just take that point, if you would, Joan, for a last thought from you about what that tells you about her, I guess, more sophisticated, more experienced political smarts, about how she dealt with that and what that may portend for her future.
Well, I think what happened to Susan Rice was ugly because clearly Susan Rice did not bear responsibility for sharing the talking points that were given to her. And had she revealed classified information, God forbid, she would have been hung. So there was a witch hunt element to that. And, you know, honestly, Hillary Clinton has lived through all of this stuff. She's lived through the vast right-wing conspiracy back when it wasn't as vast. It is vaster now. And I thought that she brought to that hearing last week was amazing because she broke a couple of rules. Women aren't supposed to cry and women aren't supposed to get mad, and she did both. But she also, there was a moment where she handled John McCain with real grace, where she said to him, I know you're close friends with Chris Stevens. I know this hurt you personally. I know you care very much about Libya. And the United States, but we just disagree about that. And it was like, boom, you know, it was just the force was dispelled. And I think she's gotten really skilled at doing that, having dealt with it.
And we'll have to hold it there. I want to thank both Joan Walsh and Paul Richter for their contributions to our program. Thank you both. We'll continue after the break with Bruce Kane and add some other voices as we continue to consider the past and future of Hillary Clinton. This is Forum. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Today is Hillary Clinton's last day as Secretary of State, and in this hour of Forum, we're considering her legacy in that position, also her remarkable career over the past two decades and where that career may take her next. We heard from Joan Walsh at Salon.com, Paul Richter at the LA Times in our first half hour, along with Bruce Kane, Professor of Political Science at Stanford University. Bruce stays with us. We'll add a couple of more voices in just a moment, but Bruce, if you would, please, I'd like you to listen to one bit of tape and have you comment on it first. Right before the break, we talked about the Benghazi hearing, and Joan Walsh was referring to the dexterity with which Secretary Clinton dealt with John McCain. Here is some tape where she was being questioned by Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, and you can hear how she dealt with that particular senator.
Again, we were misled that there were supposedly protests and then something sprang out of that, an assault sprang out of that. And that was easily ascertained that was not the fact.
But
and the American people could have known that within days, and they didn't know that.
With all due respect, the fact is we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make? It is our job to figure out what happened and do everything we can to prevent it from ever happening again, Senator.
A selection of the interchange between Hillary Clinton and Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. I guess, Bruce Kane, it shows that Ron Johnson may have been able to smack down Russ Feingold a couple of years ago, but not Hillary Clinton.
No, he should have known that she wouldn't be easy. But she did answer it forcefully, and I think by most counts came out on top in that. But that doesn't mean that that's the last she's ever going to hear of this, particularly if she decides to run for the presidency. She won't hear it in a Democratic primary. I don't think anybody on the Democratic side is terribly exercised by this issue. But almost certainly the Republicans will use it to rally their base, if nothing else. I think a lot of Republicans believe that there was a cover-up and that somehow this administration actually knew the facts and somehow didn't keep them, didn't release them. And, if she were to run again, they would tie this in with other sort of controversies that she's been involved in, like Travelgate and Filegate and Vince Foster's death and Whitewater and all that. So, they're going to try to present a picture of this kind of cloudy past where her involvement in things where she might have been made a mistake is either covered up or whitewashed over. And I could see that being a rallying cry for the base of the Republican Party in a race against her. I don't see it as a factor in a Democratic primary.
Bruce Kane joining us this morning from Washington, D.C. We're going to add some other voices into our conversation now. We'd like to add yours as well. You can join us at 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org or post your thoughts on our Facebook page or on our website. Joining us too, Corey Shockey. She's a research fellow at Hoover Institution at Stanford University and a professor in international security studies at the United States Military Academy at West Point. Her new book is State of Disrepair, Fixing the Culture and Practices of the State Department. Corey Shockey, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
And joining us, too, is Chris Lehane, Democratic consultant, partner in Fabiani. And Lehane, former aide in the Clinton White House, also Al Gore's press secretary during his presidential run in 2000. Chris, always good to have you join us.
Dave, thanks for having me. Always fun to be here.
So first on that exchange that we heard and on Bruce Kane's thought that that may be sort of the stuff of a future campaign against Hillary Clinton, should she choose to run in 2016. Corey Shockey, first, do you think that is something that will linger with Hillary Clinton?
Well, my experience of political campaigns is people toss a lot of stuff up and see what gets traction. My own view on the State Department's choices in Benghazi, though, is that they made some mistakes in the apportionment of resources and things. But, in fact, in the period of the crisis itself, they did the right things. They trusted the risk assessment of the ambassador on the ground, and they backed him up to the extent that they could. So I don't share a lot of the excitement, but I do think Secretary Clinton made a huge mistake, and that was not after Ambassador Stevens had been killed. She should have been the face out there saying, look, we don't know what happened. Join us in grieving the loss of a great American diplomat. I mean, as secretary, she could have diffused this in the immediate aftermath of the killing, and she didn't.
Chris, you specialize in many ways in contending with difficult news moments. Your book, Masters of Disasters, is all about that. Do you agree with that interesting point from Corey Shockey that Hillary Clinton would have been well served and the nation would have been served if she had sort of stood up more in that moment rather than having Susan Rice essentially be the fall woman?
No, I mean, I appreciate the point that was made, but I think you got to go back in time and recognize the milieu that it was taking place in, right? It was in the middle of what at the time was a relatively close presidential campaign. It instantaneously was politicized. I think the administration was mindful of having a person in a Secretary of State position, not necessarily engaging and injecting into a presidential campaign, which in and of itself would have generated all sorts of controversy. And I think as someone, who does on a day-in and day-out basis deal with crises, I actually think that the Secretary did exactly what you're supposed to do in a crisis, which is not rush out with an answer or a position until you actually know the facts. And as a result of that, there are a lot of people who did go out and put out information, who have had to deal with the consequences of that. But she's able to point back at that point in time and be able to say that she maintained her credibility. And that puts her in a position so that when she goes and testified, as took place a few weeks ago, she can fire back in a way that others could not. And that exchange was the classic, right, two sounds, Hillary hitting the senator hitting the ground. And she was able to do that because she had been able to maintain her credibility throughout the entire incident. And you don't deal with crises by chasing news cycles. You deal with crises by actually maintaining your credibility over the long haul.
And what do you see, Chris, that she's learned about that? Corey Shockey and Bruce Kane have commented on whether you need to step forward in this. And Bruce talked about also the going back to the tangled history of the Clinton years when you served there. Is she that much more adept at contending with crises and the way in which that would also lend itself to her being able to be masterful at that should she run in 2016?
Yeah, no, I think it's a really good point, and I do think it's one of the reasons why, distinct from a lot of other folks in the administration, she handled it quite differently. She had the basis of having gone through experiences like this, both personal in nature and obviously as a first lady and having gone through a presidential campaign of her own, to understand and sort of projecting forward. If you think about a presidential campaign, depending on how you want to look at it, it's either one long extended crisis or a series of protracted crises that get put together. And through that cauldron, people extrapolate an awful lot about who you are as a person and ultimately your character and whether you can be trusted. And I do think that, she understands that in a unique way and in a way that you can only understand it if you've been through it at the highest levels. And that's why I think she handled Benghazi in a particular way. And I think it's, it will be illustrative and in some ways, indicates how she'd handle, a future campaign should she choose.
Interesting. I'm curious to hear both Corey and Bruce weigh in on that. And in terms of what it says about her as a leader, Corey Shockey first and then Bruce Kane on what you've observed about Secretary Clinton's leadership capability from what was gleaned over these last 4 years as secretary.
Secretary Clinton's been a pretty good leader of the State Department. She initiated the first serious high-level management review. She didn't follow it through, the Quadrennial Diplomacy and Development Review, but she cared about managing the department well. She worked to get resources for it. She and in most cases, she stood up to be counted when it counted. I think there's a distinction between a successful political candidate and a good leader of an organization. And I think on Benghazi, I defer to Chris on the question of crisis management as a politician. But as a leader, she actually should have stood up and been the face of the department.
And Bruce Kane, what do you make of what she has learned as a leader? There's a certain, I guess I'm interested in the sort of toughness that she exudes, which I think sometimes many people who were supportive of Barack Obama wished that he had shown more of. Is that something that will argue in her favor in a prospective campaign?
Yes, I think it. I mean, early on in her career, it was not in her favor, obviously, because early on in her career, her forcefulness was a little jarring to people that had traditional views about women and their role in society.
The old, I didn't want to stay home and make cookies part of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, like a lot of our social attitudes, whether it's about gay rights or women's rights or whatever. Fortunately, we've progressed, or at least a lot of the country has progressed, not all parts of the country have progressed into realizing that that is a sexist way of thinking about it. And so I think her forcefulness has found the time, right, the context, where earlier it wasn't there. So I don't think that's new. I think maybe the management part that Corey was talking about, she seems to get pretty good reviews coming out of the State Department as a manager, although we may hear more of this once she's out of there. We may get more sort of feedback from people. But that's important because there was a sense coming out of the presidential campaign that the campaign wasn't well run, that there was kind of chaos to it, that they didn't see strategic points that they should have seen. So if she can emerge out of this and there isn't kind of a backlash after she's left office about her management skills, then I think that that will be probably a more enduring or a better claim for him or her going forward into the next presidential election.
It's interesting to consider. There's probably no one who could run for president who has had a broader array of experience inside the White House as First Lady, inside Congress as a senator, and then inside the president's cabinet. So she certainly would bring a lot in that regard. Let's hear what our listeners are thinking about Hillary Clinton on this, the last day of her tenure as Secretary of State. Claire gets us started in Oakland. Claire, you're on.
Hi, I was just curious about the point of the interview, the CBS interview. Was it something that CBS asked for, or was it something that Hillary wanted in order to show that she was going out, A, that she was healthy, and that, B, she was still in good graces, that she was going out on her good terms? And did Obama owe her something from Bill Clinton campaigning for him so strongly? And was this something that Obama had agreed to previously? I'll help you if you get me through this.
Okay. Thanks, Claire. Reference to the 60 Minutes interview, the story at least, Chris Lehane, please take this one, is that it was actually something that Barack Obama suggested.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any inside information other than what I have seen reported and what the White House said, which is the president suggested it, and I believe it was actually the White House that affirmatively reached out to 60 Minutes to suggest it. But I think what it really goes to is that really over the last 4 years, a real personal relationship, has been established between the two of them. And I think that, one of the things that the president has talked about, and you talk with folks in the White House at the most senior levels, they have been unbelievably impressed by the fact that the secretary, had the White House and in particular the president's back, on any number of occasions over the last 4 years, and a real relationship developed there. And she did a lot of the hard work, rolling up their sleeves, doing the incredibly difficult work that really effective secretaries do often really behind the scenes to set up wins for the president. And, she did that over 4 years. And I think that at some level, the president doing that interview and suggesting it was a way of expressing his gratitude and thankfulness for everything that she had done. I think it was really that simple.
Skip writes in, Hillary Clinton has done as much for women in politics as Maggie Thatcher. You could take that a lot of different ways. Corey Shockey, what's your take on that?
Well, I do think Secretary Clinton, somebody made an interesting point a couple of minutes ago about the notion that when Hillary Clinton came on the scene in the early 1990s, she was a lot less liked than she is now. But I also think she was a lot more sharp-edged then than she is now. I mean, she has gotten graceful. She has gotten more comfortable in her power and ability to affect things. And she has served the president extraordinarily well, in addition to the fact that she's a political heavyweight in her own right. I do think she's actually done a whole lot for women in politics by showing that she's tough, as a congressional testimony from last week, that Chuck Hagel wishes he actually could take swings the way Hillary Clinton did. And that's been terrific for women.
Yeah. Do you think Chuck Hagel, Bruce Kane, would have been well served if she'd had a little tutorial from Hillary Clinton before going up to the Hill?
Yeah, well, I mean, you start with the fact that Chuck Hagel has never been one of the more articulate people in the Senate. And then you add to the fact that Hillary has always been one of the more articulate people. And I'm not sure how many tutorials. He certainly could have done more homework, that's for sure.
Let's go to Mark next in San Jose. Mark, go ahead.
Thank you for having me on. I wanted to comment about a comment that President Clinton had made when he was helping the current President Obama win his second term. He made a statement in an interview about how much easier it was to help him for the second term than it was for the first in order to, you know, get out the vote. And I think President Clinton did more to help President Obama probably than any other single person during the election. And I thought that the president appointing or nominating Hillary was a very classy thing to do, and it really unified the party in a very important way at a very important time, because it was a kind of a knockdown, drag-out primary, and I was originally a Hillary Clinton supporter myself, and I just thought the whole way it played out was not calculated at all, but it was really to demonstrate a difference between the Democratic Party and the rest of the folks that are out there trying to stop the government from working.
Mark, thanks. Chris, you know, unified Democrats is always kind of an oxymoron, but do you think that sustains itself, or will inevitably there be the sort of battering that takes place in the 2016 primary, whoever runs?
Yeah, well, compared to Republicans these days, I think we feel pretty good on the Democratic side. But, you know, I think a lot needs to be played out over the next several years. You know, obviously you have the vice president who's potentially looking at a run. You'll have other folks out there, you know, of significant standing. You know, all of that said, as we stand here today and with the huge qualifier that, you know, inevitably the conventional wisdom is almost always wrong and a lot of things will change and shift, you know, she obviously starts off in an incredibly strong position, both the experience, the fact that, you know, she really would have, you know, capacity to reach to all aspects of the party, ability to raise money, all the types of things that you would look, you know, for someone who'd be well positioned. You know, she does start off in just a fundamentally different position than anyone else. But again, I think a lot is going to change. A lot will shift. And, you know, the one truism in politics is that what's true today will be very different tomorrow.
Is that also, Bruce Kane, her fundamental strength also her fundamental danger or weakness in that she was also mm-hmm. formidable in 2008, and the fact that the sort of inevitability factor that didn't work well for her in 2008 could come back again in 2016?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point that the front runner status has its advantages, but it also has its disadvantages because the news cycle tends to shift around and once the press has coronated you, they want to take the crown off. But in addition, you know, it sort of sets you into a certain strategy. There are certain establishment people that she lined up very early, but then, you know, they neglected a different constituency, the caucuses. They neglected the younger people that were going to come out. So you have to assume that they've got to learn something from that. And that they realize that they can't just sort of do a coronation walk. They've got to realize that even if she's got a big lead, you never know, that there can be these rump strategies, rebel strategies. And there are going to be some people in the party that are going to not be happy with her for the positions that she's taken, say, on foreign policy. She's been more consistently on the hawk side. So there are people on the left that are going to remember that and not be terribly happy to see her, you know, her candidacy. Younger women, you know, I think they had some concern that she was sort of handed things. My sense, talking to students, et cetera, is that she's done a lot to repair that image by, you know, having a second job, not only the Senate, but also going out there and doing such a good job as Secretary of State. But still, she's got to be able to relate to that crowd, because last time, her strength was with older voters, was with the working class. She needs to be able to work into this constituency of younger, highly educated people that Barack Obama rode to the nomination.
Here's an email from Terry that I'd love your comment on, Corey Shockey. Terry writes, if Benghazi had happened in the Bush administration, the press would have had a feeding frenzy calling for his head, Rice's head and Cheney's head, and we'd still be hearing about it today. It's liberal hypocrisy. Do you agree?
Well, I do think the administration has had a lot of answering to do about what happened in Benghazi. Secretary of State got dragged in front of Congress to testify on it. Secretary of Defense is getting dragged in front of Congress to testify on it, too. And frankly, I think they should. But yes, I do believe the Obama administration gets an easier pass from most media than the Bush administration did.
And Chris Lehane, on the question of the campaign that Bruce Cain was talking about, and some of the sort of basic tactical errors were made during Hillary's 2008 campaign, mm-hmm. ignoring the caucuses and all of that, seems kind of unbelievable in the past. Why weren't you running things anyway, by the way? But what... has she learned those tactical strategies? Because there's always, and if so, how do you avoid kind of fighting the last war and making sure you fast forward to whatever 2016 will be about?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, sometimes I don't think people fully realize is that, you know, there was a lot of expectations that when the then senator ran in 2008, that it was going to be, you know, the Clinton team and campaign from the president's operations. And it really wasn't. It was really, you know, a very good operation out of New York, but an operation that really had not done presidential campaigns. And people also sometimes forget that you know, then-Governor Clinton never really had to run in an Iowa caucus, because in 1992, Tom Harkin was running, so the Iowa caucuses really didn't count. And so, you know, there really hadn't been folks who had gone through a caucus experience, whereas, and again, I don't think people fully appreciated this, the Obama team and campaign was loaded with people who had done prior caucuses. And so, look, I there is no question that if she decides to move forward again, I think there is going to be the, you know, the benefit of the experience of that. All of that said, you know, sometimes what is also forgotten is that she did something that no one has ever really seen in a modern day presidential campaign. You know, after it was, you know, effectively Barack Obama's to lose, she ran the table in the second half of those primaries,
right.
You know, with a lot less money. And she did it on the basis of just the pure strength of her candidacy. And so I think that if you take the second part of that campaign and you apply a campaign over the long haul, that's an incredibly formidable candidate. So I do think, you know, the question has already at some level been answered. She did learn, and she applied it really quickly.
Hmm. And a reminder to everyone that this is a fundraising period on KQED. For more information about how to support KQED, you can go to kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum. Let's take another call. David in San Francisco. David, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just sort of wanted your feedback or your opinions on, I mean, I've always been a Hillary supporter, and I just think she's such a strong role model for women and just a positive role model for Americans. And then you see the, you know, she's done so much in the last 4 years after her first run as president. But then you see the Sarah Palins, who are leaders of political parties, or the Michelle Bachmans, who are just so negative and shrill. And Sarah Palin had such an opportunity in the first, you know, these last 4 years, and she squandered it away by just being this shrill person, you know, just, you know, nattering at President Obama for the last 4 years. And Hillary is just strong, positive, and smart. She's simply a smart woman, and I can't for the life of me imagine why any woman would want to not support her and support the Palins and the Bachmans of a Republican Party.
David, thanks.
Thank you.
Yep. And will the question have we gotten beyond, do you think, the question of gender, or will inevitably that be front and center once again? Cory Shackey, go ahead.
No, we have not got beyond. Just for example, the fact that the two women the caller mentioned, he described as shrill. We have a lot of shrill male voices in the conversation about politics in this country, and yet men don't get tagged with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually got asked on another radio program whether Secretary Clinton wasn't a failure because she hadn't put her husband to better use in American foreign policy as secretary. No male Secretary of State would get asked that, irrespective of what their wife did. So we still have a long ways to go before gender doesn't matter at all, which is when sexism will be overcome.
Bruce Cain.
Well, that's certainly right. But so she does have a difficult choice coming up, which is how to spend her time over the next couple of years, because I don't think she's going to plunge into a campaign right away. That would be very early. So what job do you do? For example, do you go work within the Clinton Foundation on humanitarian projects with the possibility that sort of ties you more closely to Bill Clinton and some of his activities,
that people have questioned, in the last couple of years? Or do you strike out on your own? I mean, it's hard to imagine that you would become a university president because you want to talk about a headache job. Being a university president in the current economic environment is no picnic. And you don't want to do that and possibly get into a fight with the faculty or not raise enough money or whatever. Plus, it doesn't give you a lot of time to do the campaigning. So I think she's got to pick the next job carefully to make sure that it doesn't have any financial conflict of interest, because that's been a problem in the past with her. And, you don't want to tie into those scandals and bring them out again. So I think the next decision is an important decision, and that may well be the reason why she's, going to take her time on it, aside from the health issues.
So as we conclude our program on this, the last day of her tenure as Secretary of State, just a last thought from each of you about what we ought to think about when we think about Hillary Clinton and where you think she may head next. Cory Schottky.
I think she's been a very good Secretary of State and deserves a lot of credit for that. She has done the job like a calm, competent professional. If I were betting money, I would bet that her dream job would be an appointment to the Supreme Court.
Huh. Chris Lehane.
I know her personally and, I've had that privilege, and she is someone who, gets up every day and, this may sound a little corny, but really does care enormously about what she can do to make the country and the world a better place. And I think she did that, exceptionally well over the last 4 years. And, we all like to sort of prognosticate and guess as to what she is going to do next. But I think the answers that she's given publicly, which is what she has said privately to folks, are accurate, which is I don't think she, has really made up her mind yet. She joked last week that she wants to be able to wake up and be able to go back to sleep if she wants. And I think it's going to take a couple months before we really have a sense of what's next and where she wants to go and what that will tell us.
And Bruce Kane, last quick thought.
I think that in the end, she's going to wake up one morning and say that the destiny is to run again for the presidency and that this is an excellent job. And that's what I think she'll do.
Bruce Kane, Chris Lehane, Cory Schottky, thanks all so much. Earlier, thanks to Paul Richter and Joan Walsh. Appreciate your contributions to our show today. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Amanda Stupai is our engagement producer. Danny Bringer, our engineer. Dan Zoll, our senior editor. Raul Ramirez, our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.